There is a secret that most pro athletes, elite CEOs, and high performers all know. They all have a group of world-class coaches working for them to help them optimize their potential. At Super Athlete Radio, our goal is to provide you with the caliber of world-class coaches and guests to help you unlock your potential, dominate your industry, and dominate your life. Let's get better today.
And Bernie, welcome to Super Athlete Radio. How are you today?
Hey, I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
We spent about 15 minutes before getting on here talking about how you ended up from California to Arizona, and then how I'm looking at sending my family to Arizona from Miami, Florida, conduit through California. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So we're going to be neighbors again, right? That's kind of cool. Yeah. Greatness loves company, right?
Greatness loves company. That's the truth. Before we get into nutrition and peak performance and things like that, I'd love to hear a little bit about kind of how you grew up and whether health and fitness and things like that were a part of your lifestyle and your history.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they were a massive part of my growing up. I started in athletics when I was 8 years old, and my dad was he's a professional engineer, but he's a bodybuilder back in the day and a power lifter. And he also played football with a very famous guy who went on to play pro football. But my dad was the quarterback on his eighth grade team for Roberts Dairy in Omaha, Nebraska. And that team had the Sayers brothers, Gail and Roger Sayers, on it. And so, I was involved in the athletics, you know, knowing all my dad's history, and my dad being an engineer, he built a weight room in our basement. And so he built like lat pull down machines out of 2x4s and cables and all of that kind of stuff. And so I grew up watching my dad and also then wanting to be like my dad, like I want to do that. And growing up with brothers as well, it was I like to say it was bench press, not Barbies. And so if I wanted to be part of the gang, right, I was lifting weights because that was cool, and I was not playing with dolls, and which was great. So from a very early age, I'm working out. I played competitive soccer. I ran on a club track team, and this is from 8 years old all the way up through high school. And then, of course, after that, I continued. And then I competed in gymnastics.
And do you feel like that benefited you doing a variety of different sports?
I think so. I think it did. I mean, I didn't specialize, but you know, it really depends on you know, I guess who you're surrounded with. Like my dad, it was almost, my parents were divorced, and so sports was the logical thing for him to get us all into, because there was four of us and we all lived with him, me and my three brothers. And so I don't want to say it was a babysitter, but it was better than going to a babysitter. Let's get these kids in athletics, and instead of just having them sit at some daycare. Now trying to balance four kids and all the different sports, my dad had to pick things that, okay, I can drop these two at soccer while these two are playing football. And then all of us ran track together. So it probably, you know, I didn't specialize because it would have been a little bit too hard, I think, on my dad trying to, like, all he would do is end up driving his whole life. So he'd drop us at our sports and then he'd go train and work out at the gym. And sometimes we'd go walk to the gym and meet him. I mean, I can remember walking into these gyms. There's a place in Omaha called Champion Charlie's Muscle Palace, right?
Okay, that's a legit name.
Yeah, Champion Charlie's Muscle Palace. And so I'd have to walk like, I don't know, it's probably about a mile from the YMCA. And I'd go walk to, you know, because I knew my dad was training there. And so I'd finish up soccer. And if he hadn't picked us up yet, I'm like, I'm just going to walk there. And so I did. And I remember walking into this place, and it's this hole in the wall, pretty much. At least that's what it felt like, because it always smelled absolutely horrible in there. And the windows are all fogged up because everybody's sweating, right? And I walk in, here's this little girl with blonde hair and all of these massive, to me, they were huge because I'm like 9, 10, 11 years old. And here's these guys, they're benching, they're doing, you know, squats and all of this stuff. And I'm just sitting there in the corner watching, right? So anyway, with all that said, I think, you know, I wanted to play baseball at one point. My dad's like, nah, we don't have time. Like, I can't do that.
Logistics don't work.
Yeah, logistics don't work. But
training and logistics win wars, and when you're a single dad with four kids.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and then also nutrition-wise, because my dad was kind of he was a bodybuilder, we're eating chicken breast and broccoli and no sugary cereals, no Doritos, none of that stuff. The only time I got that was if I was going to my friend's house and, you know, like they would have Doritos and I would like eat the whole bag because I never got any. Yeah, they're like, where'd our Doritos go? My dad's like looking for them, like, sorry, you know.
And then what was your dad's communication to you guys in terms of nutrition? Like, was he trying to explain exactly why you guys were eating what you were eating and what not to eat, and how receptive were you guys?
No, he didn't really say much. It was more by example because we're watching him. I mean, he was the guy who would come to find out, like we'd go with our dad shopping at the grocery store and there was a mall in Omaha, and come to find out it was the first GNC in Omaha, Nebraska. And I remember going into that place and always smelled funny, you know, like the health food stores do. And my dad would get some of this stuff, like he'd buy bulgur wheat and protein powder, all this stuff, right? And I didn't know what it was, but I was like, all right, this is the muscle store. And my dad would make these shakes, these concoctions, and he'd call them power packs. And all of us like, oh, that's so cool. We want a power pack. Dad, make us a power pack. Well, that was really like protein. He put protein powder, put some ice milk, which is kind of like ice cream, but without all the fat in it. So protein powder, ice milk, he'd crack a raw egg in it back in the 70s, right? That was a thing. And we'd drink it, right? And it's like, oh, we're going to be like our dad, strong. But he didn't really sit down ever and say, hey, this is how you eat. It was just, we had this thing where at four kids, you know, when your dad's not around, you create a vocabulary all your own. And we used to call the kids that were non-athletic and were eating garbage, we'd call them the white bread kids. And we did not want to be the white bread kids. So we're eating the wheat bread. And so we started, like, we noticed our nutrition was different. And we noticed we were athletically outperforming most of our classmates, with the exception of the ones that were in athletics. And so when you're a kid and you're winning, like, it's kind of a good thing, right? You start developing some confidence. And so, yeah, the nutrition was more just by observation than sitting down and looking. But now hindsight, I can see, like, wow, how fortunate I was. At the time, I didn't realize it. But now I realize, like, setting up those habits really young was a good thing.
Those protein packs impacted what you're doing now.
Yeah, well, I mean, hindsight is where it all comes into play. Like, I never thought in a million years then, being a kid, that I would actually be in this industry, you know? And even when I went off to college, I did not study nutrition. But I had that foundation of healthy eating and eating whole foods and trying to stay away from the garbage. Not to say that I didn't have my share of pizza and things that maybe are not really, they're not daily things, but every once in a while, yeah, I'm having some ice cream and I'm having some pizza. But I'm for the most part, trying to, eat healthy whole foods. So, yeah, I guess college, you know, I was going to school for graphic design. And so I still didn't have any kind of nutrition in my future, or at least I didn't think so. But I had a curious mind and I had an entrepreneurial spirit, because what I wanted to do when I was in college, I'm like, okay, I want to run my own design firm. I want to be my own boss. And so how do I do that? And so I guess that thinking kind of translated into why I'm here, where I am now, was running my own business and determining my own destiny, not working for somebody else, but learning as much as I can from other people, and then, you know, launching and doing it on my own and building something on my own. So I've always wanted, and I set out at a very early age, you know, my peers, not, you may know what it's like, you know, to be an entrepreneur, you're a bit different, right? You're a little riskier, and you're aiming somewhere. You have an aim, and everything you're doing, you can, is going towards that aim. And so the discipline that I had, like, you know, with physically was the same as mentally. And so, you know, running a business and being disciplined there is no different than, being a performance athlete, right? All those same things go into business as they do athletics. And so I guess that's how I would tie it together. You know, you know, you asked me about how did the protein packs end up where now here I am in the sports nutrition. I guess it would be just the mental and physical aligned. And so not knowing that it was protein packs then, but it's transpired that way, that all those influences are why I am where I'm at. Because I love athletics. I love sports. And I also love creating and building. And so here I am. It's kind of two things combined.
And then whenever I go to a conference that's like targeting entrepreneurs and or like a business conference, the health for the majority of people there is, it seems like there's that could, it's not prioritized. You being in the space, how much do you feel like there's maybe leaving cognitive benefits on the table, energy, focus, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're in business, in terms of taking more time to prioritize your nutrition and health, do you feel like that's something that can be a benefit?
Well, being in the sports nutrition space, if I show up and I'm not involved in sports at all, and my physical body is a representation of how I'm running my business, I think. Am I taking care of myself physically? It's going to show up in your performances, whatever you do. Doesn't matter. If I wasn't in sports nutrition, when I was just strictly doing graphic design, that's when I competed in bodybuilding back then. So, but my work product was reflected in my physical nature and vice versa. When I was taking care of myself, or when there really hasn't been a major lapse in me investing in my mental state and my physical. But those two are connected, I think. I feel like I can function at my best when my best being physical and mental. They're not separate, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And so if you're in a business and you know, things are firing on all cylinders for your business, yet you're not taking care of your body, you're missing out on a huge portion. I mean, I would suggest that you could actually up your business if you upped your game and your physical nature, right? In your performance. Taking care of the physical body takes care of the mind as well, I think. I don't think you can separate them.
Yeah. And I've always been a advocate of, like, the bigger the professional challenge, to have a physical challenge to match with it, because you can have so much more control over the outcome of the physical challenge compared to the professional challenge. And then if you could talk a little bit, how did you found Vitargo? How did you enter into the sports nutrition space?
Yeah.
From graphic design.
Well, yeah, I know, kind of a weird transition, isn't it? So Vitargo, I was an investor in the former company called Vitargo Global Sciences, and I had met that former CEO on an airplane. He was coming out of Las Vegas, and so I started working for him. And then there was a point where I'm going to skip over a lot of details, but I'll give you the short version. He got into some financial troubles and had to claim bankruptcy. And I was a big investor. Like myself and my family had invested in the company as well as I was doing work for it. And I was actually starting a female brand of Vitargo. And so
let's explain real quick. What is Vitargo? Just real quick.
So it is somewhat confusing because Vitargo. So my company is called Vitargo Inc. Now I didn't choose that name and there's a story behind that, but that's what it's called. So Vitargo Inc. is the exclusive distributor of a product that's patented that's called Vitargo. So that's why it's a little confusing. So Vitargo is actually it's fractionated amniopectin starch, but it's a registered trademark called Vitargo. That's the product, but then my company is called Vitargo Inc. So does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
And then what got you so interested in investing a large amount?
Well, because, yeah, so the former CEO, he actually was one of the co-founders at EAS, if you remember that brand back in the day with, yeah, I mean, it was all evidence-based. Yeah, yeah, you remember, like, Bill Phillips was there, and,
And Shannon Sharpe, who's huge now in terms of media and entertainment, was one of their big athletes.
Oh, gosh, yeah, I don't remember that name, but, So the guy that I owned Vitargo Global Sciences was, you know, co-founder of EAS, and he sold out to Bill, I believe is how it went. But then he had started Vitargo Global Sciences, but it was under a different brand called Generate, and then he transformed it into Vitargo Global Sciences. Anyway, I knew him, you know, I knew EAS, and then I was like, oh, that's an evidence-based company. And it was legit because I always looked for the science because there, you know, there's lots of stuff out there that's they make these outrageous claims and they don't have any backing, right?
It's like, oh, well, in the supplement industry, no way.
That never happens, right? Anyway, so he kind of came with he pre-vetted, right? Because I'm like, oh, okay, you follow a certain set of standards, okay. And so I was like, okay. And so then I started taking the product as well. And it was like, wow, this stuff works. I looked at the research. I'm like, okay, this is legit. And saw all the studies and all the stuff they were doing. And so I was like, this is going to go somewhere, you know? And I will say that you can have something really awesome, but there's also the business side of it, that if you have something awesome, but the business is not run in the best way, even if you have the greatest thing, this is what I found out. And I invested in the great thing, not fully understanding or having transparency to see how the business was being run. Well, he ended up claiming bankruptcy and was going to come out of it. And then all of my investment was going to be gone. Pennies on the dollar paid back. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is not good. And I wasn't the only one, but I was the biggest creditor with my family. And so I got on the creditors committee along with a bunch of, there's three other people that were owed lots of money. And long story short, the judge ended up taking the company away from the former CEO, and he had a trustee run it. And so the trustee ended up selling it, putting it up for sale. And that's when I bought the assets out of Vitargo Global Sciences. So that's how I got into it. Because my thought was...
And what do you feel like they weren't doing that you could do in terms of the business side?
Build the company, not on other people's back, but on, you know, my own back and people around me. When you get so leveraged with debt that you owe all of these people and you're taking massive amounts and putting it in your own pocket and not watching the bottom line and just, there's, you can't, for me, you can't run a business like that. There will be a day of reckoning if you don't have this like hockey puck up that you're going to get called out on, hey, you need to pay me, right? You can't live on credit for your whole life. That's how people, you know.
Yeah, I was listening to Mark Cuban last night, and that was one of the things he said it's not an raising capitals is not an achievement in itself. You know,
yeah,
like how much capital
you
raise.
Like,
yeah.
That's what it was.
Sales and profit is the achievement.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome that you said that, because that's what was happening. Like, hey, look at all this capital we raised, and where did it go? What do you have to show for it, and how are you going to pay those investors back? Oh, you're just going to claim bankruptcy and not have to pay anybody back. That's in my book, that's not the way to grow a legit business. And I know people have different opinions, and they say, well, you know, we'll take all this investor money and we'll grow the brand. Well, you actually have to have a plan, and you have to watch your books and be tracking things. You can't just say, oh, look at it. Like I was reading an article, somebody got 90 million in investor money. And thankfully they had a plan, and they actually are paying their investors back and then some, because they're executing their plan and they did well. Well, like you said, just because you get investor money, oh, look at all this stuff we got. People are investing in us. They believe in us. Well, like me, I've learned so many lessons from all of this, because, you know, obviously I didn't win in that situation. I lost my entire investment. And so for me, it was like, well, if I do nothing, then I should expect nothing. So that's why I'm like, I'm going to do something. I'm going to get on the creditors committee, and I want to see what happened. And so I got a crash course in bankruptcy. I understand what went on. And then at a certain point, I was like, well, I'm going to put a bid in and buy this thing. I bought it with a partner who has since gone, and I put in all the money. And so there's a whole story behind that we don't have to go into, but I will say
that. And was that partner ideally going to be the operations side of it?
Yeah, he was the operations. That was his expertise. And come to find out, operations is really a process. And I was a little intimidated by like, hey, I've never produced a product like a supplement in a, you know, never produced this finished good. It was intimidating. I don't know all the steps. Well, what I know now is I have produced things, like, for instance, annual reports. Producing a product like a sports nutrition product is no different than producing an annual report. You have components, you have to work with vendors, you have to do testing, you have to have protocols throughout the whole process, and then out comes the end. You have to have a channel and you have to get it out. Well, that's what operations is. So it's like, well, this is just different components. So once that light bulb went on, I'm like, wow, okay, I can do this. And my operations guy was heading down the path of spend, spend, spend. And, you know, it's like, well, wait a second, it's my money. Like we're not doing that. That I can see COVID hit as well. That's when he left. So, yeah, so I was intimidated until I was like, well, wait a second. I know this. I've run a business. At this point, I had my own design business going, and then I had another small holiday lighting business that, you know, as if I didn't have enough things to do. So, but it was all in preparation for being able to run Vitargo, right? All of these experiences go into feeding into being able to run a company that's bigger than those two were by themselves.
And then from a health and performance perspective, what is the benefit of this specific starch?
Yeah, so Vitargo has, I guess I'm going to pinpoint like four unique things that it does better than any other carbohydrate starch. It's a performance, high performance carbohydrate. So, and all of the studies, anything I'm going to tell you is backed up by peer review, university researched studies. And so they're all posted on our site, and it's on the product that comes out of the jar. It's not on an ingredient. So because, of course, when you combine ingredients, people like to make these claims like, oh, well, this ingredient does this, therefore my product does that too. Well, that's not really how it works, because there's efficacious doses, there's things that you can combine that might counteract each other. So anyway, Vitargo,
that's a great point. So just real quick. So in the supplement industry, and a lot of like, whether it's a nootropic or a pre-workout or something, they'll say more is better, with the putting just more different, like a nootropic, they put bacopa in there and green tea extract in there and things like that. And that does not necessarily, those don't necessarily work synergistically. Is what you're saying in the experience in the supplement industry.
Yeah.
Not that specific example,
true.
But you know.
Yeah. But that's true. They could not be working in harmony with each other. And then it's like, well, what are you really doing here? And so Vitargo is essentially, it's the fastest it's the fastest fuel from mouth to your muscle. So it's the fastest from the time you ingest it to get to your muscle cell to be used. And all the research was done versus maltodextrin and sugars. So, and maltodextrin is the fastest generic carb that you could pick up almost any product on the shelf that's not fructose that is got maltodextrin in it, or a proprietary blend, which I don't typically trust those because we won't go down that path right now, but we tested everything against maltodextrin because that's the fastest generic carb. And generic means anybody can buy that and put it in their product, right? So there's nothing different between company X's carbohydrate than company Y's carbohydrate, because they both have maltodextrin, right? And so that's what we tested against. And so Vitargo moves from your mouth to your muscle 2.3 times faster. And what that means is that you get fueled faster. And the beauty of where it really comes into play is muscle glycogen recovery. So there was a study done that showed muscle glycogen recovery post-exercise, and then athletes going out and competing in a subsequent bout of exhaustive training. And so the athletes that took the Vitargo compared to the maltodextrin group had a 77% greater and 70% faster muscle glycogen recovery, which is massively significant, right? So, and this comes into play for athletes that like MMA or swimming, that are doing multiple bouts of training per day. Like especially MMA, they're training in their martial art discipline, and then maybe they're going to the gym and the
different martial art discipline. And then you were in the Bay Area. Are you familiar with Victor Conti and Snack?
I know of Victor Conti. Yeah, that was the only thing I know about him. Well,
Balco
was Balco. Yeah, I don't know too much about him, but I do know about Balco and Barry Bonds.
Yeah, well, just one of my mentors is a coach by the name of Remy Corkemi, a track coach, and then he worked with Victor, and then Victor has a sports nutrition program company now, where his top product it's a sleep product, and also he has a post workout, mm-hmm. And that's what I was looking up here. It's a whey protein isolate, dextrose, glutamine, creatine, and then chromium. So it looks like the comparative here would be the dextrose is what they're using.
Yeah, the dextrose, which is not even as good as maltodextrin, apparently. So that would be, I mean, maltodextrin is a step up from dextrose. And the funny thing is for me, I mean, everybody thinks, well, all carbs are created equal. Well, they're not. And that's the challenge I have, is that, you know, getting people to understand that they aren't created equally. They are different. It's funny. I have a study that shows, if you know about L-carnitine is insulin dependent. And so we've had some athletes that are L-carnitine deficient, and because their insulin isn't raised high enough, but they've taken Vitargo, and there's a study, I mean, I don't have it posted on my site, but I do have it on my desktop, that shows in order to shuttle in the carnitine, they used Vitargo as the carbohydrate to get the insulin high enough to shuttle in the carnitine, which was like, whoa, yeah.
And were they eating it? Was the carnitine coming from food or was it coming from a supplement?
It was a supplement. It was a powdered carnitine. Yeah. And so the carnitine deficient athletes were like, oh, wow, I'm going to take my carnitine with Vitargo.
And then overall, how beneficial do you feel like post-workout nutrition is in terms of maybe timing and then also the adaptation? Do you feel like ideally 20 minutes, 30, within 20 minutes? I think 20 minutes is probably the most common frame use that you want to eat something within 20 minutes in terms of the literature and what you've seen.
Yeah, take advantage of that window of opportunity where the uptake of all the nutrients post-workout, I believe it's around 20 to 45 minutes, something like that. You want to replenish all everything that you've lost, right? There's muscle protein breakdown that you want to arrest, and then there's the muscle glycogen you want to restore. And then putting, like, we'll have a lot of athletes put in creatine. Actually, creatine and Vitargo is a great combination. I believe the studies show that you get better absorption of creatine in the presence of a carbohydrate. So why not take advantage of the money you're spending on creatine and couple it with a carb post-workout to have the uptake faster? I mean, have it the fastest with Vitargo. Boom, you're good. That might be a future product. Mm-hmm. Vitargo creatine.
And then people in the keto space, do you feel like that? Of course, there's some health benefits to being in ketosis, but from like an athletic performance perspective, do you feel like they're off the mark in terms of saying that you can eat keto 24/7, 365 and be at peak performance?
Yeah, well, I don't think the literature out there supports that thinking. So let me tell you the one study that we have, and then I'll tell you my thoughts about keto, because that we have is a performance study, because my thought is, why take a supplement if it doesn't help your performance? Just eat, right? So the performance study was done, and it showed, and we compared again to maltodextrin. So one of the groups was on Vitargo, the other Malto, and then of course there's a water placebo group. Anyway, the performance study showed that all athletes in the Vitargo group had minimum 10% up to 23% better endurance performance on their second bout of exercise, which is significant, right? And so same day. Yeah, so the study was they did exhaustive cycling, and then got off the bikes. One group, Vitargo, other group, Malto, and then they waited 2 hours. And then they did it again. The Vitargo group had all minimum was 10% better endurance performance compared to the Malto group. That's compared to Malto, not water. Even water was even more significant because maltodextrin does have an effect, but Vitargo had even a bigger effect. And if you can compete at 10% better compared to the other guy who's drinking something else, I'm going for the... That's the beauty of the speed of it fills you up faster. We have a tagline called same day recovery. So you can recover quicker and get back in the game faster. So with that said, there's also a bunch of research on after you reach like a 70% VO2 max and over, your body prefers carbohydrate. And so when you're keto, I have some great graphics on if you go into our store, you'll see, like, I think I posted it on every single product. There's a diagram in there that will show you what you're burning. Is it blood glucose, plasma glucose, or fats? At what point of your output? So at high intensities, carbohydrate is where it's at. The fat can't process fast enough to fuel the demand. If you're in a race, you've got massive demands, or you're lifting, you have massive demands on your muscle. The only thing that can fill that demand fast enough at high intensities is carbohydrate. The fat just simply is not fast enough. So if you're doing keto, we have a bunch of keto athletes that when they're right around their exercise, because they like that keto lifestyle, okay, but right around their exercise, that's when they take the carb, and when they're done, they've burned it, and they get back into their keto lifestyle. Now, I don't have any measurements about ketosis and all of that, but they call themselves keto athletes, and they have a keto lifestyle, but they fuel their training with carbohydrate. And Vitargo is easy to measure out, right? So you know, like, hey, I'm taking it in, it's going into my bloodstream, and it's around my workout, and then I'm burning it, and then, okay, now I'm done working out, and they go back to eating however they eat. Now, I'm not a big fan of keto. I mean, I am a big fan of eating lots of protein. Like my trainer had me on, I was under eating protein. I just wasn't keeping track. Yeah. So I weigh 100 and on a good day, 128, on a bad day, 125, but, I'd rather, you know, I know where I should be, but if I under eat my protein, my weight kind of like, I'm not supporting my muscle. So anyway, he had me on 185 grams of protein. So you may think, oh my God, that's way too much. It shouldn't be a pound per, right? But I'll tell you what, and I'm pounding carbs too. It wasn't like I wasn't eating my carbs, but I upped my protein. So you're more satiated and you're supporting your muscle gains, right? So I found that upping my protein, I didn't have any kind of cravings for anything. And I was so satisfied. In fact, he's like, you got to eat. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm eating all day. But I had, you know, I saw significant gains by upping my protein to that level. And like I said, some people may think that's way too much for somebody my size. But I would say, you know, anecdotally, I know because my body was its own. I was my own test subject. Like, that much protein is not too much. I think some of these daily recommended values are not really accurate. And I'm a small female, like, you know, 130 pounds ish, and I'm eating 100 or 185 grams of protein. But I'm training too. Like, if you're not training, maybe you shouldn't be having that many. But I was training and am training, and so you do need to support all of that training, and protein really is like you probably know, it's one of those things that people just, if you don't count it, you don't really have an idea. You think, oh, I had three meals today and I'm getting plenty. Well, probably each meal you're having 30 grams maybe. So that's only 90 grams of protein. Cause that was me till I start counting it. I'm like, oh man, I'm so under. Now I doubled it.
Yeah. One of the things we do with, kind of when females enter into one of our programs, we have them eat at least 50 grams of protein before lunch, and we see great improvements with that. So, I mean, I agree with what you're saying 100%. And then you said,
yeah,
carbs, pre-workout, having carbs in the system, if you're going to use your VO2 max 70% plus, there's been profound benefits in terms of performance. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, think of it this way. Like, once you get to those high intensities and you don't have carbs, I mean, you're going to crash, you're going to bonk, or you're just going to have to lower down your output. Like, you can't sustain after you burn the carbs out of your, you know, the liver that's delivering, after those get burned out, you can't sustain those high levels. That's why people crash. You cannot sustain that high level of intensity. You can do it for a little bit until all the carbs in your system are gone. And then I think, look at it as like the governor in a car. Like, you can only go so high because the gas can only get there so fast, right? Like, proteins and fats have to go from your mouth, processed in the liver, and then to the muscle. Whereas carbohydrate goes straight from the mouth into the muscle. That's the difference. And so, yeah, at high intensity levels, you simply, the research shows it, and you can't get around it. And I, you know, people will, oh yes, I can still train at high intensity levels. Well, not for very long, until your carbs burn out, and then you're going to get ratcheted down. Your perceived level of exertion may feel like, man, I'm just at the peak of how much I can go. But if we were to actually measure your output, it would be less. It would not be at the highest level.
And then as we go back and forth here between the performance side of things and the business side of things, I think the business story is really interesting. I mean, many athletes, you can tell them the literature, but they're probably like, okay, whatever. How did you start convincing high-performing athletes to try it? And then what were some benefits that they saw that really started helping you gain traction?
Yeah, well, when you have some advocates in the industry, it really helps a lot. And there's some things that, like, science isn't like the sexy thing, right? People aren't like, oh my gosh, that's some really awesome science, and I'm going to take your product. But sports nutritionists love that stuff. So if you appeal to the trainers and the sports nutritionists of the world, those are the ones that influence, the higher level athletes. But I would say gym
bros.
Just
tell the athlete, take this and then drink it.
Yeah, well, and some of the athletes don't even know they're taking it. Like I get stories of these, pro basketball players, NBA guys, that don't even know what their trainer puts in the thing. I go, so they don't know they're taking Vitargo? Who's like, no, I just tell them to drink it. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't afford those names on my payroll. Like, but some of the highest of the highest level NBA, NFL teams, like Super Bowl teams that I won't name that have been there 2 years in a row, are taking Vitargo and because the sports nutritionists understand the benefits and they see the results. And the science guys, when you have advocates like that, I'm working with he's pretty legit guy doing lots of, he's all evidence-based. His name's Dan Garner. Working with him, and he's known about Vitargo for years and recommends it to his elite athletes and uses it. And when you get results, just like being a trainer or training pro athletes, when your training methodologies and modalities get results for your athletes, they start to speak for themselves. Right. And people are like, oh, I'm training with Chase and here's what's happened to my performance since training with him. Plus, I'm injury free now. Like all of those things add up. And so that's kind of how Vitargo has gotten or stayed in the game, is these people who understand the science and can recommend it from that standpoint. Like UFC Performance Institute understands the advantage Vitargo gives to those athletes during specifically not just for their training but for weight cutting. When you have post weight cut, you have to negotiate that window of time to get in the cage the next day after you get off the scale. So you're depleted, right? I mean, if you really wrap your mind around what happens in any sport that is weight, when you have weight classes that you need to make, you're depleting, and hopefully you're not too far away from your weight, but you have nutritionists that understand you got to get rid of that water. Well, carbohydrate it hydrates you, it holds on to that water, so you don't want Vitargo so much in that diet right before your weight cutting. But once you get off that scale, you need to negotiate that time to get your muscles filled back up with glycogen so you can perform at your best. Vitargo's the fastest to replenish the glycogen compared to anything else. And that's why a lot of fighters, wrestlers and MMA guys and girls like Vitargo because of that. It's fast. Yeah, boxers. It's really great for that sport. And a lot of basically all sports, but that's a specific use in MMA and other combat sports is the post weight cut. And these guys, like down in Florida, there's a group that I work with. They at Killcliff FC, they know the benefits of Vitargo, but they also have at these higher levels, they have coaches that understand this stuff, and so it may not be like on the shelf everywhere. It's almost like this cult following where there's this whole other thing that goes on in sports nutrition, and there's a bunch of great products that don't really, they're not household names, but they actually do some great things, and they're actually supported by some of the top coaches in the world. Vitargo's on that list because I'm not a household name. I know that. But it is great for me to know that I'm putting out the best possible product. And also with that comes all the testing. Like we test every batch for banned substances, which is a big deal. You know, we're servicing NCAA athletes and of course professional athletes and the, you know, so that's the other reason that a lot of sports nutritionists who are working at the pro and elite level feel good. They can recommend Vitargo because they know I test every batch. You can go check. It's a third party testing. You can go check the batch with the lot number and okay, it's tested. We're not going to get in trouble with this. And believe it or not, there was a recent survey done. They surveyed like 8,000 supplement products on the market. And they found that 28% of them would give you a dirty drug test.
That's insane. That's
isn't
amazing.
That crazy? It's like, whoa. And you're totally oblivious, right? And consumers don't know this. I mean, it's not publicized. But when you start reading and you have that curious mind, like, hey, how do I figure this stuff out? You know, you can, you know, start seeking out things and you'll find there's certain things that'll keep these athletes safe. And I've got kids. I'm not about to give my kids something that's actually going to sabotage their performance. And they're, you know, if they're going to looking for a career in athletics, collegiate or professional, you gotta know these things or align yourself with somebody who does know, like a lot of coaches know. You know, so at least if you're going down that path, you're informed. You're not just going to take any old thing, just, you know, and I get a lot of calls like, hey, do you test and what do you test for? And can I see it? Yes, I have it all. You can see it all. Here's where you go. So it's really something to keep athletes safe. So we don't compromise on that ever, 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 ever.
And then the supplement industry is a very competitive space. In turn, is that one of the biggest things that you find most challenging to deal with is false claims or what's?
Yeah, that can be, well, there's misconceptions like, you know, like I was saying earlier, all carbs are created equal. Well, that's not true. I mean, I have out there, I remember I went to this trade show and I'm talking to this guy who he's got a company that sells sports nutrition and they're pretty well known. And he uses dextrose in his product and he's talking to me. He's like, yeah, we both have fast carbs. And I'm thinking like, well, no, but no, yours is not the same as mine. What are you talking about? But the consumer doesn't realize that even if I say fastest, this is the fastest, unless they read into it or have somebody saying, hey, this is really a game changer. They'll know the advantage of a fast carbohydrate, but they will think when they see it on somebody's label that they're all the same. And that's the hard thing that, like, I can post science, but if people don't look past the flashy, you know, the words that say fast and they don't understand what that means, then they will think everything's the same. It doesn't matter what I take as long as it's a starch carbohydrate, you know?
And then so, in terms of where the industry is trending, is there anything that you're excited about in terms of whether it's health or performance benefits or moving toward next 5-10 years?
Well, I have been just a one product company since I took this over. And Vitargo, the Vitargo Global Sciences had a combination of, they had a two products. They had the Vitargo starch carbohydrate, and then they had a Vitargo mix with protein. And so, but that product, it tasted bad. Frankly, I didn't like it. A lot of people, well, you either liked it or you hated it. Sometimes flavor, even though it could be really good, it can crush you if it tastes bad. If you can't choke it down, well, the people aren't going to buy it. Anyway, so we've been a one product company for a while. But so looking into the future, we've got some things we're working on to extend our product line. And because we've been so focused on fueled training, there's a whole other side of science that also points to the benefits of fasted training. And so there's something interesting that we're working on to address that. And I'm not a scientist by any means, but I am aligned with some science people that formulate. And so we have something in the works that should be quite, it's unique, and it's going to fill a void that we don't, a audience that we don't speak to right now. So it should be fun. I'm looking forward to it because I'm looking at the formula. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't wait to try this. Because I'm a cyclist, right? And I'm out there like pushing it, even though I'm not competing right now anyway. You never know. I might be a master cyclist one day. But I think I am, right? Like, you know, I'm still competitive in my own right, right? I'm looking at my times. You may not know of the app Strava. I'm a Strava junkie, right? And I'm always looking to up my times on there or capture a QOM. And if I'm lucky, a KOM, which means I even beat the guys. Anyway, so and you can see the ages of people. And so I'm in the 55 plus category, but I'm like looking like, ooh, and some of these people I know are like, they're racers. And so when I can actually just tag on to a racer's time, I'm like, all right, not bad, right? So I still like being competitive, beating my times, all of that stuff. I you know, those are my little mini wins and my mini goals to see. You know, if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And so I like to, you know, even in cycling, I'm still getting better, and I'm in my 50s, right? And so you think, oh my God, you're going to be over the hill. You're never going to, you know, it's all down. How many times have I heard, oh, it's all downhill from here. Oh, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do this. I'm like, yeah, like, you know what? I forget this on Instagram. It's Active Reflex or something. Anyway, they post a lot about, you can tell a lot about how someone's going to age by their muscle mass, not by the wrinkles in their face, but by their muscle mass. And if you don't train, and as you lose muscle mass over time, it's been proven that your quality of life and longevity of life will be shortened. I mean, there's so many statistics out there, people falling and they never come back from a broken hip or whatever it is. But part of it is they don't have the muscle mass. They've let themselves go. And I think there's a whole new mindset that can be adopted as you age, is keep that as a priority. Building muscle, keeping your bone density. I mean, it helps with bone density, all those things. It's really an advantage that, you know, athletes get it, right? As long as you haven't dieted up and down and kind of ruined your metabolism and, you know, your bone density. Some people diet too much and kind of sabotage themselves that are athletes at a certain point, if you know what I'm talking about. But maintaining muscle mass even into your 70s, 80s, it's so important. And funny thing is, you can start, like, if you're 60 years old, start today. Start right now. That's the thing. It's not too late until it is, right? So it's just getting past that, what society tells you, oh, you know, what, you're too old, or you're never going to be X, or you're never going to be Y. Like, who says? Who really says? You can start at 60 years old and build yourself up. I just saw this. I always post these things on Vitargo's Instagram when I find them fascinating, all these athletic feats. And here's this woman, she's in her 90s and she's doing the hurdles, right? And she didn't start till she was 60. So she's had 30 years of competing as a master's track athlete. I'm like, so don't ever tell me that, oh, well, I can't do this. I shouldn't be doing this. I'm too old. I'm like, baloney. You're lazy. You're not old. You're just lazy.
Yeah, self-imposed.
Sometimes limits. a little bit harsh, but really to encourage people to get healthy, and you're not going to be dependent on somebody to, you know, take care of you. You can take care of yourself. And you can work out and do resistance training all the way until your last days, really. I mean, not everybody, but 99% of the people in the world.
Yeah, that's the goal over here.
Yeah.
And then in terms of, are there any specific rituals and or routines that have you found most beneficial to you in terms of what your specific goals are, whether that's on the bike or with the business or outside of those two?
Yeah. So I would say it's good to set goals, even if they may be insignificant to some people. And some people, like, I get criticized. Like, my one of my goals is do 100 miles a week on my bike. Okay. And someone's like, why are you doing that? Like, what's the point? Like, who cares? I'm like, for me, these goals set up, you're disciplined. You do it even when you don't want to do it. Like, there's certain things in business, I don't want to make that phone call, but you do it because you need to do it. But if you don't have these goals set up or this discipline or this regiment set up, then you give yourself every reason, every excuse as to why you didn't do it. And then you just don't progress. If you have a growth mindset, you're like, what is it that I need to do for me to set myself up for success? Well, I work better when self-discipline too. It's not like someone telling me you have to do this. It's like, I choose whether or not I'm going to go ride 100 miles a week. But once you set your mind on it, then do it. Don't give yourself an out. And it's a good way also to be with your kids, you know, that, hey, we're, you know, even with what, like academics, there's consequences for not being accountable. You know, I don't demand perfection from my kids by any means. I mean, I want them to strive for success, but you do have setbacks. I was telling my son this the other day. You know, I'm realistic. You have setbacks. The biggest thing is just your response to those setbacks. Okay, so you didn't go to the gym today. How are you going to respond? If you respond the next day by not going and the next day by not going, that's a problem. It's okay if you miss, and but your response, then you pick it right back up and keep going. That's reality. I have setbacks too. The difference is your response. So respond and get back in the game.
How quickly can you recover?
Yeah, I don't know if that answered your question, but yeah, just being disciplined and inflicting it on yourself. Really, that's what I do. Right? Hey, I mean, nobody makes you do, like, go to the gym, right? You make you go to the gym. And that discipline in the gym or on the bike or on the mat translates into discipline, your work ethic. Like, you plan things out and that's what you do. You execute. It's the difference between trying and training. I heard this in a sermon. He's talking about, what's the difference between trying and training? Well, training, you're committed. Because trying gives you a way out. Like, oh, I tried, but I didn't make it, so I guess that's not for me. Training is, I'm going to show up day after day after day after day because I'm aiming somewhere. I have a goal. So my training, that like I said, that's the difference. Training has a commitment where trying allows you a way out. So that's what I would say. Yeah.
And then real quick to wrap this up, Bernie, a couple quick questions, rapid fire. Biggest mentor you've had in your life?
Oh my gosh, there's a couple. I would say my dad, mainly by watching. And I would say actually my CFO, he's works for me, yet he's a mentor. He's my kind of business coach guy, which is kind of a unique situation, but he's been there, done that. He's been a CEO and now he's my CFO. So his name's Mark. He's awesome. Level-headed guy and knows how to execute a plan. And so, yeah. And then of course I have a bunch of like other people that I like to follow and get inspired from. Some of it is, you know, I get inspiration from my kids, but some bigger names that I really enjoy listening to that give me pause to think, like Jordan Peterson. I think that guy's awesome. Yeah, big brain guy. I because all of his things, that they may be so cerebral, but they can, if you really listen, they translate into all aspects, physical and mental, in your life. Because the way you do one thing is the way you can do everything, and the way you will do everything. So, okay, next one. Fire up.
Best book or research paper you read in the past year?
I don't know, Dr. Seuss. I'm so bad about reading books. I am more of a short article reading. But I will tell you this: my kids are the curriculum that they're reading out of. Oh gosh, what is it? My son's reading Socrates right now, and so he comes home and we have these discussions about his reading. And so I'm getting a whole new education along with him about all these philosophers and. I would say whatever he's reading is what I'm kind of distance reading through him.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome. Yeah. And then the habit that you've either added or taken away in the past year that's had the most impact on your life.
Ooh, gosh. The habit that I've, golly, in the last year. Well, I would say I may have to go back a couple years, but the habit that well, there's two. Always make your bed. You've probably seen that me or that guy go around, the military guy, talking about starting.
Yeah, Wayne McCraven.
Yeah, make your bed. And so my kids, I'm like, my son, hey, make your bed. And he started making his bed, and now he's kind of like, oh, that's a thing. You can see the little, hey.
First win of the day.
Yeah, ka-ching. And then recording my workouts, and be it in the gym or on the bike. Strava automatically records on the bike, but being more regimented with that, like setting goals and actually making sure they happen. Like last year, it's the first time I ever set a distance goal on the bike. I'm like, I'm gonna ride 5,000 miles for the year. That would be my longest achievement, right? And so it gets to December and I'm like, I got to ride this massive amount. I mean, I've been riding, but it's like, I have to ride like 500 miles and it's cold outside. And oh my gosh, how am I going to get that done in December when there's a week of Christmas? Like what, how am I going to do this? And so I'm going about like the 3 weeks, I'm like, okay, I'm going to make it. And then we make this surprise trip to Colorado to go see my brother. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm going to not have 5 days in the month. How am I going to do this now? And then my son reminds me, well, you said you were going to do 100 miles a week and that would be 5,200 miles. And so at this point, I'm like, okay, he called me out. I can't not attain this. So I had the most epic December, riding in the cold, the worst time to ride. Not that it's that cold in Arizona, but it's rainy. Like, but I achieved it. Like I rode then 52 something, 50, 5,200 and whatever it was. And the last ride I did was in Steamboat, Colorado on a mountain bike in the snow. Cause I was like, I'm going to get this darn goal for goodness sake.
The difference between trying and training.
Yeah. I was like, okay, so put your money where your mouth is. And so, especially when you have your kids call you out, you know, and I have it on a video where I said that. And he's like, you said that. I'm like, did I? And I go back and find, I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay, then I'm doing it. So don't give yourself an out. Don't give yourself an excuse. You know, follow through and just do it. And do it.
That's awesome. Yeah. And over and over.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's awesome, Bernie. Well, thank you so much for coming on Super Athlete Radio today. So many of our audience is just looking for different marginal ways that they can improve, right? Just to, you know, go from above average to great. So whether that's nutrition, whether that's rituals, routines, what they're doing with their performance. And it sounds like the product and the literature and the science backs up with the starts that you're selling, that Vitargo does that in spades. Where is the best way people can find that? And then also best way to connect with you personally?
Yeah. My website is VitargoUSA.com. So Vitargo is a weird word from Sweden. It's VITARGO, then USA.com. And then me, you can always find me, Bernie@VitargoUSA.com. That's my email, or info@VitargoUSA. Or they can call you and say, Chase, I need to talk to Bernie. And put me on a workout regimen and let's go. Right?
That's your communication tactic to get us to become an affiliate, it sounds like.
That's right. Well, yeah. Yeah, let's set you up with a code. If anybody wants to try Vitargo, they can connect with you and you can get things hooked up. But hey, we're going to be neighbors, right? We're going to be neighbors soon. So we'll have to get together and who knows, we'll have to do some more of this stuff. And shoot, too bad you're not going to be here in July. They're having this big thing over here close to me. I think it's called the USA Fit Expo.
Okay.
So you'll have to do the 2025 one.
It's every year there?
Yeah. Yeah. It's every year. Yeah. And it's really close to me. So it's like, there's no reason why I shouldn't like be there. Right. It's where they have all the Barrett Jackson stuff.
Okay. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Bernie. We're a home run with our audience and let's talk soon.
All right. Safe travels. Yeah. Keep in touch and let me know when you get here.